We're going to talk about the Hey P. Arthritis chapter from the world's best free and peer-reviewed textbook, www.orthopedia.com, edited by Bernstein, Penny, and Vaudet. But before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us. Read the book. Welcome to the deep dive. We're here to cut through the noise, pull out the really crucial bits of knowledge, and maybe give you some surprising facts you can actually use. Today, we're diving into hip arthritis. It's something that affects so many people, often quite subtly at first. You might picture someone, maybe always active, suddenly struggling with, you know, tying their shoes or even just getting out of the car. That can often be a sign. Something's up in the hip joint. So our goal today, to really unpack hip arthritis. What is it? How does it show up? How do we diagnose it? And what can we actually do about it? We want to give you a clear, kind of concise picture, focusing on the details that really matter in a clinical setting.
Yeah, and it's a really vital topic for anyone in healthcare, honestly. Hip arthritis is incredibly common, but the way it presents, well, it can be a bit tricky, sometimes looking like other things. So getting a solid handle on the pathology, the signs, the management, it's absolutely key. We'll try to go through it systematically, you know, looking at the key questions, starting from what's happening inside the joint right up to how it impacts a patient's day-to-day life. Build a framework, essentially.
Okay, so let's unpack this. When we talk about arthritis of the hip, what structures?
Yeah.
What are we actually focused on? What's going wrong at that joint level?
Right. So at its heart, hip arthritis is about the surfaces of the joint that move against each other. You've got the acetabulum, that's the socket in the pelvis.
The cup part.
Exactly, the cup. And then you have the head of the femur, the ball at the top of your thigh bone. Normally, these are covered in this amazing smooth tissue called articular cartilage or hyaline cartilage. Mm. And this stuff is crucial. It's a shock absorber, yes, but it also creates this incredibly low friction surface. Allows for smooth, easy movement through the hip's whole range. Mm-hmm. When that system starts to break down, that's really the beginning of the arthritis cascade.
So if that vital cartilage is failing, what usually triggers it? Is it just simple wear and tear, or are there more specific things we should look out for?
The biggest player by far is osteoarthritis.
Oh.
OA. Basically, that articular cartilage just progressively breaks down. And often, you know, there isn't one single identifiable cause. Just happens over time.
Right.
But certain things can definitely speed it up. Structural issues, maybe developmental dysplasia, where the hip socket didn't form quite right.
From childhood?
Yeah, or maybe a slipped epis, but back in adolescence. These things can change the mechanics subtly, leading to faster wear later on.
Mm-hmm.
Less often, it can be directly from trauma, like a bad fracture that damages the joint surface, or maybe dislocation that messes with the blood supply to the femoral head.
Yeah.
That causes osteonecrosis, bone death. We also see a really strong link with obesity.
Mm.
Now, the obvious thought is just increased mechanical load, right? More weight, more stress.
So sure.
But there's also research looking into whether there's maybe a circulating systemic factor involved or some other confounder we don't fully understand yet. It might not just be the mechanics. And it's really important to distinguish OA from rheumatoid arthritis, RA.
Different beast entirely.
Totally different. RA is autoimmune. The body's immune system actually attacks the joint lining, the synovium, and the cartilage itself. Now, interestingly, while OA is mainly driven by mechanical stress, inflammatory mediators, cytokines, enzymes, they do get involved in OA progression too. They cause some local synovitis. So even though RA is primarily inflammatory and OA is primarily degenerative, there can be some overlap in the inflammatory response you see within the joint.
That makes sense. Autoimmune versus mechanical stress starting it off. But okay, beyond that initial cartilage damage, I'm really interested in the progression. How does the joint fundamentally change as OA gets worse? What does it actually look like inside?
Right. So as it progresses, it's not just the cartilage anymore. The bone underneath starts changing too.
Mm.
Once that cartilage is really worn down, you get bone grinding directly on bone.
Ouch.
Yeah. And this constant friction actually polishes the bone surfaces. They become smooth, shiny, almost like polished ivory. We call that specific change eburnation.
Eburnation. Okay. So the body's trying to smooth it out.
But it's bone on bone. It's incredibly painful. It's a sign of really advanced disease.
Yeah.
And underneath that polished surface, the bone actually gets denser, thicker. That's called subchondral sclerosis. It's the bone reacting. It's trying to strengthen itself against those abnormal forces.
Makes sense.
And then around the edges of the joint, you start seeing these irregular bony growths pop up.
Mm-hmm.
Osteophytes, bone spurs. Mm-hmm. So eburnation, sclerosis, osteophytes. Those are the classic radiographic signs of advanced hip OA. You see those, you know what you're dealing with.
Okay, so shifting to the clinic, How does a patient typically present? If you're seeing someone, what are those classic signs, those symptoms that make you think, ah, this could be Hippo A?
Well, patients usually come in complaining about stiffness, pain, and just limited movement, both when they try to move their hip and when you, the clinician, try to move it passively. The pain itself is often described as this diffuse, dull ache. And here's a really key point. The most common spot for that pain is the groin.
The groin area.
Yes. But, and this is where it gets tricky, it can absolutely radiate to the buttock, down the thigh, sometimes even just presenting as knee pain, which can throw you off, right?
Instantly.
A very common story is that the pain gets worse with weight bearing. Walking, standing for a while, definitely climbing stairs. And that classic description you mentioned earlier, difficulty reaching down to tie their shoes. That's a perfect example of that stiffness and groin pain combo. And because of that radiating pain, you always have to think about other possibilities. Like if the pain is mostly on the outside of the hip, the lateral side, that's more likely to be something like greater trochanteric bursitis, not the joint itself usually. Or if the main complaint is buttock pain, you got to consider the lower back lumbar disc issues, spinal stenosis before jumping to hip OA. Needs a good exam.
Right. The body's wiring can send signals in weird ways.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a limp earlier. That's often a very characteristic sign, isn't it? Can you break down this antalgic gait? What is it and why is it so common here?
Absolutely. That limp you see with hip arthritis, it's often described as sort of a rocking stride. Now, visually, it might look a bit like a Trendelenburg gait, which you see with true weakness in the hip abductor muscles, the gluteus medius and minimus.
Okay.
But in hip arthritis, it's usually not true muscle weakness causing it. It's pain avoidance. The patient is subconsciously changing how they walk to avoid firing those abductor muscles because contracting those muscles puts a huge load across the painful hip joint.
Ah, so they're protecting it.
Exactly. They develop this antalgic gait. Antalgic just means against pain. So instead of using the abductors normally, they kind of shift their upper body, their torso, over the painful hip when they're standing on that leg. Looks like a lurch.
Right. I can picture that.
And the biomechanics are fascinating. When you stand on one leg, your abductors have to work incredibly hard, generating forces many times your body weight just to keep your pelvis level.
Wow.
Yeah. So that lurch is the body's clever, unconscious trick to shift the center of gravity more directly over the hip joint, reducing the need for that massive abductor force and therefore reducing the pain. It's a smart adaptation, even if it's awkward.
So we've got the patient's story, the physical exam clues. Mm-hmm. What objective evidence do we use to really nail the diagnosis of hip OA, and how do we judge how bad it is?
Yeah, the objective evidence really comes down to imaging, specifically x-rays, radiographs. The standard views we need are a weight-bearing AP that's front-to-back view of the whole pelvis, plus a lateral or side view of the hip in question.
Weight-bearing is key.
Crucial, because you want to see how the joint space looks under load. We then stage the severity based on those things we talked about. How much the joint space is narrowed, if there's that subchondral sclerosis, the bone thickening, and how many osteophytes or bone spurs have formed. And getting both hips imaged is good practice because it's often a bilateral condition.
Makes sense.
But here's a really important caveat, something clinicians run into all the time. The x-ray findings don't always match the patient's symptoms perfectly.
How so?
You can have someone with really gnarly looking x-rays, severe arthritis, but they report relatively little pain. And the flip side, someone comes in with terrible hip pain, but their x-rays only show mild changes. And in that second case, you really have to question if the mild arthritis is truly the main source of their severe pain. It makes OA less likely as the sole culprit.
Okay, that's a critical point. So if the x-rays don't quite fit, or maybe it just isn't hip arthritis, what else should be on our radar? What's in that differential diagnosis?
Great question. Because, yeah, that disconnect happens. If the symptoms seem out of proportion to the x-rays, or if the pain pattern is a bit weird, you got to think broader. A big one, especially for groin pain, is actually referred pain from the lumbar spine. Lumbar stenosis, degenerative disc disease. You know, there's that old saying, lumbar spine doesn't cause groin pain, hip doesn't cause pain above the belt. Honestly, it's not reliable. Don't bet the farm on it. Pain referral can be tricky.
Good to know. What else?
In younger folks, or those with maybe just mild changes on x-ray but significant pain, you should think about things like femoroacetabular impingement, FAI, or maybe a labral tear. These are more structural, mechanical issues within the joint itself that can cause pain before major cartilage loss happens.
Yeah.
And if you see signs of osteonecrosis, that bone death we mentioned, but there's no history of trauma, that's a red flag. You need to dig deeper for a systemic cause, like maybe lupus or chronic steroid use, or check other joints. It often points to something bigger going on.
Got it. So given these tricky referral patterns, particularly differentiating from low back or SI joint pain, is there a specific test that helps sort that out?
Yes, absolutely. The Faber test is really helpful here. The name Faber is actually an acronym for the hip position: flexion, abduction, and external rotation.
Okay, Faber, how do you do it?
So you have the patient lying down, you gently flex their hip, bring the knee outwards, abduct it, and let the hip rotate externally so the foot comes towards the opposite knee, kind of like a figure four position. Then you apply gentle downward pressure on the knee towards the examining table or pelvis.
And what are you looking for?
You're looking for pain, obviously. But where the pain is located is absolutely critical. If the patient feels pain primarily in the anterior groin, like right in the front, that points strongly towards the hip joint itself, suggesting arthritis. However, if the pain they feel is more in the posterior groin or buttock area, especially on the opposite side, the contralateral side, that's much more indicative of a problem with the sacroiliac joint.
Ah, so location is everything with that test.
Exactly. It's a subtle but vital difference. And you need to do it on both sides, because testing one leg stresses the hip on that side, but it actually stresses the SI joint on the other side.
Wow, okay. These details really matter, don't they? It highlights how complex diagnosing hip pain can be and why good resources are essential. We have been talking about a chapter from the free and peer-reviewed textbook, Orthopedia, at www.orthopedia.com, edited by Bernstein, Pinney, and Vayet. But before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us. Read the book. All right, so let's say we've confidently diagnosed hip arthritis. What's the treatment plan look like, starting with the non-operative stuff?
Right, you always start conservatively. The goal is pain relief and improving function without jumping to surgery. Physical therapy is really a cornerstone, strengthening muscles around the hip, but also the core muscles, the abs, that provides a lot of stability and can really help manage pain.
Makes sense.
Then you have pain medications. Your standard non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, NSAIDs and Tylenol or acetaminophen, they can help take the edge off. Weight loss is also huge. We know it's hard for patients to achieve and maintain, but reducing the load across that joint can make a significant difference in symptoms and maybe even slow down the disease progression.
Every pound helps, presumably.
It really does. And finally, cortisone injections directly into the hip joint can be very effective for reducing inflammation and pain, buying some time. But the hip joint is deep. You can't just reliably poke a needle in based on feel. So those injections pretty much always need guidance, either fluoroscopy, which is like live X-ray, or ultrasound to make sure the needle gets right into the joint space safely.
Got it. Now, you mentioned load reduction. What fascinates me is how something as simple as a cane can make such a big difference. How does that work biomechanically?
Yeah, it's surprisingly effective. And the mechanics are quite elegant. The absolute key, though, is using the cane on the opposite side of the painful hip.
Opposite side. Why? Yeah.
Okay, think back to when you stand on one leg. We said those abductor muscles on the standing side have to fire like crazy to keep your pelvis level,
well,
right?
Generating huge forces.
Exactly. Forces multiple times your body weight, all compressing that hip joint. Now, if you hold a cane in the hand opposite the painful hip and push down on it as you take a step,
yeah,
that cane acts like an external support. It helps keep the pelvis level without needing as much force from your own abductor muscles. So by using the cane on the contralateral side, you're essentially offloading those powerful pain-generating abductor muscle forces from the affected hip. It directly reduces the compression in the joint. Simple, but really effective.
That's brilliant. Okay, so when those conservative things, PT, meds, injections, the cane, when they aren't cutting it anymore, what are the surgical options? What's the go-to?
Surgery really comes into play when the symptoms are truly disabling, when the pain and loss of function are significantly impacting quality of life, and conservative measures just haven't provided enough relief. By far the most common and incredibly successful operation for end-stage hip arthritis is total hip arthroplasty, or THA, total hip replacement.
It's a hip replacement.
That's the one. In a THA, we remove the damaged ball, the femoral head, and socket the acetabulum and replace them with artificial components. Prosthetics, usually made of metal alloys, highly durable plastics like polyethylene and sometimes ceramics.
And how well does that work?
It's honestly one of the most successful operations in all of medicine. The pain relief is usually dramatic, and patients regain significant mobility and function. It can be truly life-changing. Now, it is major surgery, so there are risks, of course. Perioperative complications happen in maybe 1% of cases, things like infection, blood clots, dislocation. And the implants themselves, while amazing, don't last forever. They can wear out or loosen over many years, sometimes needing revision surgery down the line.
But generally very effective.
Immensely effective. So much so that older operations like hip fusion arthrodesis, where they basically just fuse the ball to the socket so it doesn't move at all, are almost never done anymore for arthritis. THA provides such better function.
Okay, as we start to wrap up, let's do a quick sort of key takeaways round. We've covered a lot, but let's revisit five essential terms. For each one, what's the single most important clinical insight or aha moment for understanding hip arthritis? Not just the definition, but the core concept.
Okay, I like it. Lightning round insights. Let's go. First, hip osteoarthritis, the key insight. It's progressive. It's not just wear and tear that stays static. Understanding that journey from cartilage damage to bone changes is crucial. And remember, even though it starts mechanically, inflammation becomes part of the pain cycle.
Got it. Progressive and inflammatory components. Next.
Eburnation. The aha moment here is seeing this on an x-ray and knowing it means bone on bone. The cartilage buffer is gone. It signifies severe end-stage disease and explains a lot about the patient's likely pain level.
Right. Visual sign of severe friction. Third.
Intalgic gait. The insight. It's about pain avoidance, not usually weakness. That lurching pattern is the patient subconsciously trying to unload the painful joint. It's a direct physical manifestation of their pain response.
Pain avoidance, not weakness. Okay, number four.
The Faber test. Crucial insight. Location, location, location of the pain matters. Don't just ask, does it hurt? Ask, where does it hurt?
Yeah.
Anterior groin pain points to the hip. Contralateral posterior pain points to the SI joint. That distinction is key for diagnosis.
Differentiating source by pain location. Perfect. And finally.
Total hip replacement. The aha moment is its transformative potential. For the right patient with end-stage disease, it's not just surgery. It's often a profound restoration of quality of life, relieving debilitating pain and restoring function when nothing else worked. #tag tag outro.
You know, as we finish up this deep dive on hip arthritis, here's something to maybe mull over. We've talked a lot about the mechanics, the inflammation, the x-ray findings, but think about that disconnect we mentioned. Some people have terrible looking x-rays but feel okay. Others have mild findings but are in agony. It really underscores how subjective pain is, doesn't it? It pushes us, I think, beyond just the images and the tests to really listen deeply to what the patient is experiencing, their individual story. It's a good reminder that medicine is both science and, well, a very human art. We have just discussed a chapter from the world's best free and peer-reviewed textbook of musculoskeletal medicine, Orthopedia. Orthopedia by Bernstein, Pinney, and Vayet. It is available at www.orthopedia.com at no charge. And again, before you take a test, and certainly before you take care of a patient, don't rely on us. Read the book. You'll be glad you did.